On Monday, July 16th, 1945, at 5:29 in the morning, scientists tested the first atomic bomb. It was part of the secretive Manhattan Project, and within several weeks, the U.S. would use the bomb to destroy the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, plunging the world into a nuclear arms race that continues to this day. Our next story is about what happened the night before the dawn of the nuclear age, near the blast site in New Mexico, where an extraordinary sound rose out of the desert. Jeff Rice has this reporter's notebook.
Felix DePaola was just 18 years old and a private in the Army when he witnessed the world's first atomic test at Trinity Base Camp in New Mexico.
We felt the shock wave and then the heat wave, you know.
Now in his 90s, DePaola is one of the few people still alive to have seen the blast firsthand.
It was fairly dark because of the cloud cover that day. There was cloud cover from the rain, but the whole canyon lit up.
The rain had almost delayed the test. It had cleared enough that morning for the scientists to go ahead, but the night before was marked by a summer monsoon that came down hard. As the scientists and engineers waited for the morning, they heard what seemed like a thousand voices calling in the desert.
And boy, they were croaking like crazy. One of the GIs that I was with told me, he said, they're toads, Felix.
I first heard about the toads of Trinity from a 1973 archival interview with Frank Oppenheimer, the brother of Robert Oppenheimer, best known as the father of the atomic bomb. In the interview, Frank described what he called frogs at Trinity Base Camp.
The night before the test, all the frogs in that era had gathered in a little pond by the camp and copulated and squalled all night long. And there's a kind of funny significance to the only living thing around there coming together. I mean, everything was full of import.
It was a small detail compared to the events that were about to happen. But in the drama of the mostly sleepless night before the test, the toads resonated in the ears of the scientists waiting for the morning. They've since become a footnote to the atomic age, but little else has really been said or written about them. What did they sound like? Why were they there? Whatever happened to the toads of Trinity? So I decided to set out to see if I could find them. 2 years ago, in July, I was given special permission from the Army to come to a small patch of ground near the Trinity site in New Mexico, where I would be allowed to wait for darkness and listen.
Okay, ground zero is right up there.
Jim Eccles is a historian of the Trinity test and a retired public affairs officer for the range. On this day, he's my guide.
That's where the creosote, that dark green band along there, used to be uninterrupted until the atomic bomb explosion burned off all the creosote in a nice circle.
He takes me to an abandoned ranch on the White Sands Missile Range, where the Manhattan Project scientists and their support crew prepared for and watched the explosion.
This was the default position for watching, but there were several hundred people here.
Not much is here now, except for a couple of adobe buildings, a few fences, and a large water tower. But next to that is a massive earthen basin that sometimes fills with rainwater and, presumably, toads.
And the missile range calls it Pond Site on their maps because of these catchment basins over here.
The term pond site seems like an exaggeration at best. Today it's 106 degrees in the shade, and the soil looks like it hasn't seen water in years. But scientists I spoke with were confident there were toads here then and now, burrowed under the ground, waiting. Doug Burkett is a biologist for the range.
They are underground and staying completely dormant, where they can survive long extended periods of drought, so they're very rarely on the surface.
He says the toads can stay underground for up to 7 years and come up for short periods of time here only when conditions are favorable, that is, following large rain events and during the July-August monsoon season. Burkett says there may have been as many as 5 different species of toads calling at base camp in 1945. I asked him if he thought the toads might still be here.
They were certainly here in the same ones that are there now. These guys have really been protected as far as the habitats on the missile range. Overall, the land has not changed much at all.
As the sun sets back at base camp, I'm left alone in the desert, just me and the ghosts of the Manhattan Project. The wind picks up, and I can feel the humidity rising. I crouch behind the door of my car and listen for hours. But that night, there is no rain, and there are no toads. A year later, at home in Seattle, I receive an email from my contact at the range. Conditions are more favorable. It's rained at base camp. I catch a plane to Albuquerque and drive more than 100 miles south to the missile range. It's August 1st and the heat is still intense, but this time when I get there, sure enough, there is water. The ditches around base camp are full of tadpoles. The toads are still there. I wait for darkness and the sound starts faintly from the edge of camp. I see several species of toads that night. Some are basking in the chocolate-colored water in the ditches. Others are simply hopping through base camp. It rained a few days ago, and you can still hear the green toads call in the distance. By midnight, the toad's call has risen to a scream. I am immediately struck by this intense struggle for life. But on the other side of all this is the legacy of the atomic bomb. 200,000 dead at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, generations of fear, and the threat of world annihilation that we still face today. Physicist Robert Oppenheimer seemed to wrestle with this profound ambivalence as he tried to come to grips with what he and the other scientists had accomplished here in the desert.
We knew the world would not be the same. Few people laughed. Few people cried. Most people were silent.
In a 1965 NBC documentary about the bomb, Oppenheimer recalled the words from the Bhagavad Gita, a Hindu scripture that he would sometimes read in the original Sanskrit.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Despite that dire vision, on this night at least, it feels like there is a new world being created all around me. For Here and Now, I'm Jeff Rice.
Jeff's story was produced with support from the Acoustic Atlas at Montana State University. The recorded interview with Frank Oppenheimer was provided by the Niels Bohr Library and Archives at the American Institute of Physics.